honestly, the moment of silence before the game, I think that was, for me personally, that's one of the best moments I've had, in, I think, in my life, when I think you're talking about 10, 11,000 people in Hampden Park. You know, I know it's not a sellout, but the silence that fell, in terms of just respect, from the Irish people to the Scottish people, I think you just can't ignore that. And I think, you know, I think my reaction to the goal was, you know, poignant in terms of being a very, you know, familiar to Chrysler. But I think, you know, look at Katie's reaction straight away. You know, her reaction isn't like, "Oh, right, you know, come on, let's party with Amber." Like, it's straight away. It's she appreciates what my reaction is, and I think the team follows through with that. And I think, you know, we had our moment of silence on Saturday morning at training with Chrysler, and I think that carried through. And I have absolutely no doubt that anybody that was affected with us was there with us last night, and they carried us through that result.
One of the texts that's come in from a Limerick listener says, "Oh my God, what a pleasure to listen to Amber. What a dignified girl. Donegal can be so, so, so proud of her. I was in tears as she paid tribute to all who died in Chrysler, a credit to her family, her county and her country." And Amber, I mean, you've given a lift to the people of Donegal at a time of tragedy. You've also given a lift to the whole country because, you know, that local tiny a village, crossroads of Chrysler, you know, the sorrow felt there was echoed in the county at large and then all around the country. And, you know, what you've done overnight, you and the rest of the team, has been to lift our spirits a little bit at a sad time.
I think, yeah, like we've done our best to lift spirits, but like, I think, again, in terms of perspective, I don't think you can. I think it's been very, very difficult, and I think, you know,
I'm sorry for upsetting you, Amber, by bringing this so close to you, but it's probably something that's been in your thoughts pretty much all your resting hours.
Hi, it's Vera Powell here. I'm not sure.
Vera?
Yeah, hi. Shall I take over for a moment?
You can, of course, Vera. And I think, you know, our listeners are empathizing with Amber and how dignified and how articulate she has been in the wake of this terrible tragedy, which touched her so closely in Donegal.
Okay, so I'm just going to get you to flop your legs and wide apart.
Okay.
I'm just going to put in the speculum. It's okay. Very quick. I then just use a brush to take the cells.
Perfect.
If you're relaxed, you don't feel anything. And are you okay for me to go ahead?
Fire ahead. I'm as relaxed as I'm going to be, as it were.
Okay, so now I'm just visualizing the cervix. I mean, it's completely normal.
It's not uncomfortable. It is a little bit of pressure, I would say. But other than that.
And that's it all done?
That's it all done.
It's all done.
Okay. I mean, I have done these to other people, but I never liked having them done. But that, I have to say, is the least intrusive, the least invasive, and not even remotely painful or uncomfortable or anything.
And you're very relaxed. If people are relaxed, they hardly feel anything at all.
Okay. Well, that was as a right to me, which I'm very relieved is over.
Mr. President, can I have a selfie?
All British secrets safe in America.
No, it's no to a selfie. Selfie, Mr. President, very quickly, just over here. Thank you. I'm Henry McKean from News Talk Radio Ireland. Lovely to meet you. So who's going to take the selfie for me? Here we go. Oh, thank you. You're an absolute star. Lovely to meet you, by the way. And I'm sorry I'm not in a suit.
Well, by the way, this could ruin your reputation. But
Mr. President, why thank you. Shoemakers make great presidents?
Isn't that amazing? How serious are the injuries that Alejandro has suffered?
All I can say that his face is completely destroyed. He has no lip. Like, his face, it's in bits. Like, I don't know how to describe, but just that his face is not that like he used to be anymore. It's just a complete change. Like, he's not the same anymore. So, like, we cannot really recognize him, like, the way he looks now at the moment. It's a terribly bad conditions.
That must be so distressing for you as his loved ones. That must be so distressing for you all.
Yes, and he was a very friendly child. You know, like he was the most loved in our family. Everybody spoiled him. Everybody loved him. And now the news is just terrible, and we're just in a very bad. It's terrible what we have to see with our eyes. You know.
I know you do want it, and your family are very thankful to the people in the area who came to Alejandro's rescue. I think one of them actually used a baseball bat to fight off the dog.
Yeah, that's true.
She said, in my opinion, the young girls at risk of giving up sport are those who see tampons as something they find too difficult to cope with. In school swimming, parents will skip swimming for their daughters quicker than advising about tampons. Why? I think it's an ideal opportunity for an open discussion if they've not had one. Now, I think, honestly, there'll be a lot of men listening going, oh, is there an issue with tampons?
I wonder, I suppose maybe if it comes down to, well, men know the difference between different period products. I mean, for tampons, with a very young girl, I can understand a lot of parents won't be keen maybe to introduce tampons to their younger daughters. And again, going back to the idea that, or to the fact that girls are getting their periods a little bit younger, it's a big thing for a girl to get her head around. I mean, all of us as we were growing up, and all of us when we started using tampons, it was a much bigger deal at the beginning to start using tampons as opposed to pads. A lot of mothers also, when they answered me on this, they said that they had their own difficulties using tampons, and they were probably fearful of making it an issue for their children.
They're more invasive, clearly.
They're more invasive. Yeah. You know, you put them inside you. So it's a bigger deal, the idea of asking a little girl to do that. It's very different. And it's, you know, they're already, particularly if they're very young and they're 10 and 11 and they're trying to get their heads, or 12, trying to get their heads around, I'm going to bleed every single month.
Yes.
The idea of doing something like this, putting a tampon inside, can be off-putting. Trish is right, you know, the idea, you know, that if we can get girls using tampons, we're more likely to keep them in sports, particularly things like swimming. But doing that at such a young age, it's not quite as straightforward as that. Now, there are other solutions. We've got period underwear now and period swimwear, and there are other things that will help hugely to allow girls to continue in sports. But tampons, I suppose, for most women in sports, or for most women as in terms of any kind of degree of freedom, that tampons will give them more freedom than
as opposed to pads.
But again, age is a huge factor, and girls are young girls are quite fearful, they're quite nervous, they're trying to get used to this without the idea of now putting something inside them. It's a difficult one, because I don't know of many children that age, or many parents who have children that age, whose daughters would be comfortable using tampons quite so young.
Orla, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, and I suppose like as Jen kind of alluded to, young girls that are getting periods kind of almost younger now, you know, some girls are even getting periods at the age of 9, 8, 9, 10. So it can be very overwhelming, and it can be very daunting, and that fear element. And I suppose based on my own research, one of the big barriers that came through as a physical activity and sport barrier was that of a kind of body image. You know, girls, preteens particularly, and teenagers, they're very conscious of, you know, their bodily images, what their friends think, and it can be a big barrier as it is, not even a mind just being on their period, but just body conscious anyway. So I can't imagine, you know, at that age in school, and having to actually think about tampons and think about, you know, playing sport as well. Like it can be a massive worry, and you know, it is something that needs to be talked about, and something that needs to be kind of made aware in schools and in clubs as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a conversation we've ever had in this show. Tampons, pads, what's the right thing to do?
Yeah,
it's normalising it, you see.
Yeah.
It's that's the thing. Like,
and you know,
the more vocal we are, more. Mm-hmm. You normalise it as well. So.
It's not that difficult a conversation either. I mean, it's all very practical and worth having. I mean,
because I was going to leave London, I was hating it, and he said that he'd been through a similar situation, and to keep going because you don't feel like you're in the right place, but you are, and that was really, really nice to hear. And then the conversation came up about how you're getting home. And I said, I don't know. This is like, I didn't have an iPhone. I'd had no money. had no idea how I printed out directions to get to the place. And I said, oh, yeah, I'll get the bus, I'd say. And she was like, no. No, you'll stay with us. And I said, no, I can't do that. And so we went back and forth, and he ended up giving me 20 quid for a taxi. And I did the Mrs. Doyle kind of thing where you kind of give it back, and then he gives it back to you, and you give it back to him, and he gives it back to you. And I eventually took it on the ninth round, and we kept chatting, got each other's details. And then he's like, listen, you're not going to get home on that. You're like, here's another tenner. And I was like, she was still looking at me at this point. And I said, no, I can't. I took enough from you. I'm not going to take another tenner. And he's like, okay, fine. Went out the door, said goodbye to him, gave a prolonged hug to his missus, and said goodbye. And he's like, don't forget to finish your beer. And I was a bit confused because we'd finished our beer. Like, you're an Irish person. You know when your beer is done. Like, you know. And I walked back in. He had the tenner tucked in the neck of the bottle, which is a really nice touch, you know. And I ran out trying to give it back to him, but they'd already gone. And it was the first time I was standing outside this place in London when the rain was coming down. I was standing there with a smile on my face, and I was like, this is a good place to be. And that guy's name was William Scott Moncrief, so I took that name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it? It's all lies. I'm his son.
Yeah.
Don't believe anything else, lads. Spread the word. Don't let him deny it any longer.
It is all lies. There was something uniquely sexy about the name he was attracted to, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
You're my zaddy.
Yeah. That means you're my zone.
I think when you're younger, you think, well, sure, when you're, you know, when you're in your 40s or 50s, your parents die, it's just grand because you're expecting it.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't, it's a bit of a cliche, but it doesn't matter what age you are, you know, your mammy leaving you, even if you weren't seeing her every day of the week, psychologically, it's a blow. You do feel like, and I was quite surprised by that in terms of the nature of grief, because I guess I'm lucky in that it's been a while since I've been exposed to it. I'm a bit older, a bit more aware of how I feel these days. And I was quite taken aback by the nature of grief in terms of, it's not just missing somebody. Grief isn't just like, oh, I wish they were here. Mm. Yes, that's a big element of it. But you feel it has physical, you know, ripples. You know, I found myself being quite anxious for a few weeks. My sleep was disturbed. And your whole sense of self gets rocked a little bit, because the mortality side of it, as you ask, it does come glaringly into view, whether you're aware of it or not, in terms that when your parents go, you're kind of next in line, you know?
Yeah.
You're the next ones. It kind of reminds me of the escalator to nowhere in The Simpsons. Do you remember where they would just go up and fall off the end?
Yeah.
You're kind of next on the escalator, you know? And it does rock you a little bit, and grief affects your nervous system, and it's all kinds of psychological sort of turbulence going on underneath the surface that it's taken me a few weeks to kind of be okay or be at peace with, and sort of be able to look at with curiosity and empathy, as opposed to getting caught up in the whole sense of you know, existential dread, and obviously missing my mom, you know.
Your mum had dementia, is that?
Yeah.
Right, because, you know, sometimes people, when they experience that in their family, they talk about maybe kind of a dual sense of loss. There's an initial loss of the person, and then, you know, the individual and the identity, and then ultimately death afterwards. And I'm not sure, is that something that you experienced? Had you gone through a grieving process for your mother because of the dementia?
Yeah, great question. I think so. And certainly while she had dementia and was still here, I was aware that I was losing her, and that I was, every time I went to visit her, I was slowly saying goodbye. And I guess I was surprised that when she did eventually go, how strongly it hit me, because I thought I'd kind of done my homework almost, you know, but, and that the exam would be a bit easier, but it really rocked me.
The biggest thing that was achieved by the Good Friday Agreement, in my view, is that we stopped the killing. We basically stopped the killing.
Join me, Bertie Ahern, as I sit down with the biggest players who were there at the negotiating table and hear their first-hand accounts of the challenges and the triumphs that shape one of the most historic moments in Irish history.
If we are ever to reach agreement, it must be your agreement.
We were prepared relentlessly to just stay up through the night and keep going.
To what extent should democratic governments be talking to terrorists when they still had a big arsenal?
As I remember it, Bertie Ahern and the Good Friday Agreement, episodes 1-3 are available now at newstalk.com/Good Friday Agreement on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love Ireland, and I believe you had a bigger impact on the rest of the world even than you know.
Another WhatsApper has been on. I was expelled from two schools before sitting the junior cert. Totally justified too. None of this red tape was involved. I was totally disruptive, not fit to be in school. It was clearly a hormonal or chemical imbalance and I needed focused intervention. I was taken out of school for fourth year, got the intervention I needed and was returned to a school, a very different person. Top of the class in university. Early intervention, especially with adolescent men, is the key. Now, Dermot Bannon, were you expelled?
No, but I remember getting one report and it was, I thought it was the cleverest report by a teacher ever and it was most cutting and it said, Dermot is well able for this subject, but he's making sure everybody else around him isn't. That was the story. I was a bit of a chatter in school and a bit of a messer.
So the breaking news this morning, you're taking over the Late Late.
Yeah, that's
Ryan.
The breaking news.
You've been on it so much, you might as well.
Sure, if I went on it, if I presented, they'd have no guests.
Well, that's true, because you are the guest.
I think I'm number third on the list, Jen. I think there's Jason Byrne and Mario has been on more than me, and that's about it. Yeah, no.
Anyway, tough gig. Yeah. We watch the horse race with great interest.
Why is it that Gerard Hartshaw, the monk, why is he seen as a Robin Hood figure in Dublin's inner city?
Because, like, he has his nothing that I can't call on that, you know what I mean? But, like, he was always good in the community and with families and everyone knows what, and he was a family-orientated man, you know what I mean?
So he was generous?
Yeah.
So like Robin Hood?
Yeah, like Robin Hood, take it from the, I'm not saying it, quote, taking it from the want, I'm giving it to the poor.
Taking it from the rich and giving it to the poor.
Yeah.
And that's how he was seen?
Yeah.
So he was kind of a lovable rogue?
Oh, a lovable rogue he was, yeah. Yeah, and I knew him myself and anyway, so.
And what's he like?
Just like, you know, and he jokes up like yourself, talking to yourself.
And Gerry Hutch today is a free man.
Yeah.
Perhaps he's in the community. Perhaps he's decided to go for a little holiday somewhere.
I'd say so, yes. I would say so. I'm not saying yet, but I'd say he is. I'd say he's gone already. Yes.
So you're smiling. So there is still a, you could say, an understanding with Gerry.
Yeah, there is, yes. Yeah. I can't say there's not. There is, yeah. Mm. I mean, not condoning what anything that has been done or anything like that, or for tick for tack or anything. I'm not condoning that. But like, as I said, it could be your son, it could be my son, it could be your, you know what I mean?
So there's a charisma there with him. There's something that makes you attracted to him.
Well, no, I wouldn't say attracted.
I don't mean like that. Yeah. I mean, like his personality.
Yeah, like his personality, yeah.
So I kind of think whenever you have lived through it and you've actually made peace and you've had to compromise, I think that's something that people in Northern Ireland had to do and something that the Good Friday Agreement helped people do. I think what's very interesting is if you're living south of the border and those compromises aren't forced on you, your life will get on and you will have a perfectly nice life if you don't have to compromise on those things. And so for me, it's a very interesting question. What actually are you prepared to compromise on? What are you prepared to give up if there is a new Ireland, if there is, let's say, 15% of TDs in the Dáil, which they may not be called TDs, or unionists.
Yeah.
What's the anthem going to look like? What's the flag going to look like? And then suddenly everybody kind of just goes a wee bit squeaky bum.
Yeah. I suspect very few people in the South, I think in their minds, United Ireland is just a bigger Republic of Ireland.
Right.
You know, it's not Geoffrey Donaldson is the Tánaiste.
No, look, and it may or may not be, but if you look at the census, there's almost, you know, a million people up the road who see themselves as British. Like, they don't need conversion therapy here. Like, they know they're British. And so, like this...
We cannot cure them of that fact.
You see? And so this idea that, sure, they'll join us and sure, they'll come round, a new Ireland is going to have to be for everyone.
Goal! What a moment! Maybe the moment of a lifetime for Amber Barrett! And how appropriate that it's the woman from Donegal who gives Ireland the lead at Hampden Park. She drops to her knees. Ireland 1, Scotland 0. A place in the World Cup within touching distance. The entire Irish team run to celebrate.
Isn't there a problem here that when you are in the glasshouse, you can't really throw stones? And, you know, if you're making these kind of criticisms of Pascal Donoghue and others, you yourselves have got to be above reproach. And the stories have been coming about Sinn Féin. It appears that at least in one case, the Royal Irish Academy, you don't pay your bills. You were invoiced and you didn't pay a bill for a room that was rented. That was for a particular election launch. So why did you not pay the bill? I mean, it was sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander. You didn't pay a bill.
Well, first of all, we don't actually genuinely don't have a record of receiving that invoice. So obviously, we've contacted.
So
them
do you expect the Royal Irish Academy
to be very clear?
No, even if you didn't get the invoice, does it mean even if you don't get the invoice, does it mean you presume that the Royal Irish Academy was a donor to Sinn Féin and therefore it should have been put down as a gift, if you like, to help your election efforts?
I think that's a very far-fetched way.
Well, it's not. Either you owe them if you don't. If you use the if you use the service and you didn't pay for it, that effectively is a gift. If, on the other hand, the invoice was lost and you didn't pay the invoice, well, perhaps whoever was your organizer of those particular events should have wondered, why didn't I get a bill for that? Or was it, like Pascal Donoghue's, an oversight?
Come on now, Pat.
I'm just wondering because sauce for the goose. Was it an oversight? Was it an oversight?
Of course, I mean, we have no record of receiving it. So if it could have been an oversight, absolutely. But Pat, the point here is that.
Not my king.
So they're chanting, not my king, and just behind that barrier is King Charles and the procession here at Trafalgar Square.
Stick your coronation up your ass.
They would say arse here.
Yeah, well, you know it. You know what it means, right? Okay, you're Irish, so you're gonna, you know, American probably better. I can't be honest with you here because if I do, they'll lock me up and put me in prison.
I also just want to raise an issue that was first raised with me by News Talk's Lunchtime Live programme, and I've spoken to some of the witnesses about this already, and that's an issue in relation to bullying and harassment. And maybe if I can just start with the INMO in terms of their experience of that and what more needs to be done. And this started from an email that came in from a Kate, which is not her real name. She was a nurse who left the system. And since then, the floodgates opened. So News Talk Lunchtime Live received dozens, if not hundreds, of emails. I've received many myself. That, to me, is a very serious issue. But when you have the highly pressurised environment that we have in healthcare, you add bullying and harassment in on top of all the other issues, and it's a really, really difficult situation.
Got something to say?
That woman was incredible on the hard shoulder, Kieran. Such an inspiring story.
Sean, that film recommendation from Movies and Booze was top notch. Just what I needed.
Pat, where can I find that delicious fish recipe?
That caller you had on, Andrea, was spot on about the energy crisis, but we need to look at alternatives.
Want to join in on the chat?
Send us a WhatsApp. We want your messages, voice notes and pictures. WhatsApp our new number 087 1400 106.
Anyone want another picture from my weekend in Donegal?
I know you had a couple of interactions on social media, on Twitter in October, where you were talking about anti-immigration, and there was a quote tweet from a GB News tweet where there were links between violence and immigration and migrants. And I know on social media, I guess, in your position as a role model, those comments carry weight. So I was just wondering if you have still the same held views on immigration.
So I feel right now at the moment that you're trying to hang me out to dry. So for that, I'll say next question.
Well, not at all. The discussion, I guess, Kelly, just needs to be had.
Yeah, that was a post in October. So I do feel like you are hanging me out to dry, you know, and you know me by now, and you know you're going to get the truth off me. And that's exactly the truth as it is, as I'm sitting here now. I feel like you've brought that up to try and bring up a bit of controversy. So.
Because I've got five children and two are adults, but three are young, like they're 11, 8 and 4, and they're all primary school going. And like the ripple effect of me, unfortunately, being diagnosed at stage 4 and having to retire, like my 8-year-old daughter wants to go to gymnastics that costs €180 that you have to pay for the term, and I have to say no to her. So if you could imagine I don't mean to get upset, but if you can imagine as a mother how upset that is to have to live with the guilt that sometimes you feel like it's your fault that everything's changed at home because you've got cancer and you can't afford to do those things. Like, it's not as if she's in 5 or 6 other different activities. She's in none. So it was just one activity and we couldn't afford to pay for that. And it's not just about me as the cancer patient. It's about everybody that is around you, like the whole ripple effect on your family, you know, when everything changes with a cancer diagnosis. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get upset there, but when I talk about with children, it kind of...
Linda, sorry, don't apologise for getting upset.
It's the reality, like, yeah. It's so upsetting, like, you know, and I'm still dealing with the devastation of having to retire from a job that I love.
It's an awful pity this message didn't come in when we were talking to Phil Nier. Your message regarding bullying in the hospitals is certainly being heard. My wife was back in work today to start her 13.5-hour long shift. The nurses talking to each other before and after the handover this morning were discussing some of the issues brought up on Lunchtime Live, and all were saying, wait till you hear this, all were saying that management have let it be known that it would not be looked on kindly. If anyone in there were to go on radio or elsewhere to highlight the stuff that goes on a daily basis in the hospital among the staff. So I'm asking you to please keep up the good work highlighting this disgraceful behaviour. Like, that is incredible. That if there's managers in hospitals over the past 3 to 4 days that have been listening to the issues highlighted here on News Talk, and they're telling staff that they're not in any way to communicate, not to raise issues, not to bring up any issues that have been happening, ongoing issues, wouldn't be looked on kindly.
I'm so grateful to my boobies. Honest to God, when I started out as a pastry model, I mean, I wasn't going to be rocket scientist, let's be honest, but I had a great set of tits on me. That's God's honest truth. So I started out in glamour modelling, and I'm not doing anything different that I wouldn't do on a beach. You know, I used to do Nuts magazine, Lads magazines, FHM. And, you know, what we live in a society where they go, oh, her poor children. All right, what about Nicole Kidman's kids? What about Angelina Jolie's kids?
Oh, because they got off their tops of movies.
Yeah. Simulating sex. Natalie Portman in Black Swan, there's a scene of her masturbating. I don't do that. I show a bit of nipple and I'm a disgrace. Listen, I've got 2 Lamborghinis. I'm wearing the Rolex and my kids got private education.
Yes, there's money.
Who is having the last laugh? I am.
There's money in those nipples, it turns out.
I tell you what, these nipples have been sewn on God knows how many times. I'm like a flat pack from IKEA, me, honestly. I come with instructions in a cardboard box and put me back together.
Can I ask you one final question? It's very quick. It's nothing to do with music. If you were in a fight situation, okay, Garth, would you prefer to fight a man-sized duck or 10 duck-sized men?
I've never been asked that. I'm going to have to think on that. That's tough.
Yeah.
That's really tough. I'm going to go with a man-sized duck.
Okay, right. There you go. That'll be in all the tabloids tomorrow. Garth Brooks fights man-sized duck. Garth, thanks a million for taking time to talk to us today, and we look forward to seeing you.